Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
On the Video Nasty Project, we like to ask the hard-hitting questions, like, what is a movie like The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith, considered to be one of the finest Australian films ever, nominated for the Palme d'Or, won 9 awards from the Australian Film Institute, was written by the guy who did Schindler's List. What the fuck is a movie like this doing on a list with Jess Franco and the erotic rites of Frankenstein? Why don't you check out the trailer and we'll find out.
Always tell a missionary, Blair. You get 7 and 6 a week, Tucker. Horse, sleep in the stables, no boots.
Where have you been, Master Blacksmith? Hadn't it occurred to you that you might be needed for higher things?
You do read, don't you?
Of course I read.
Morning, boss. Mrs. Yeah.
Yeah, no reference. That's course you can't bloody write.
I come to help you get rich.
And thrust your nigger to turn my property into a black scamp then.
What about me groceries? We need him.
Look, the husband's not a charitable institution, Mr. Blacksmith.
What will you lend your wife to, white boy? White fella don't lend his wife to anybody.
I understand you're going to marry a white girl, Mr. Blacksmith.
You marry a white girl? Hey, I told him.
You owe me, Mr. Newby, for 900 yards.
Listen, Jimmy. Don't you come to Bush Lawyer with me.
In my Palgrave.
You'll only lose that child of yours if you stay with the blacks.
I believe you've got a real, genuine white.
Jesus, you're a fussy bloody black.
Black bastards.
The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith is the chant of the underdog.
And welcome back. We just got done watching The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith. Now, this is the point where we go and tell you all about the synopsis of the movie, but I don't know if you've noticed, we like to talk, and we have opinions. So,
I've got opinions.
So we're just going to read very quickly the synopsis from the back of the box and then get into the talking, because we got a lot to unpack with this movie.
The shocking tale of an indigenous man driven to madness and revenge. Jimmy Blacksmith is a young Aboriginal half-caste raised in rural Australia at the turn of the century. A boy initiated by his tribe, but also educated by a stern Methodist minister. Looking to gain respectability in colonial society, Jimmy finds a white bride while performing backbreaking work on local farms, but cannot escape his skin color. Suffering ongoing racism and oppression, discovering that he may not be the father of his wife's child, and fired without pay, Jimmy explodes in a fury of violent revenge and escapes into the bush with his brother, Mort, cutting a bloody path of retribution upon the society that has rejected him.
So essentially the movie is, if you took Django Unchained and combined it with, like, Roots.
When I was watching this, I was thinking, well, one, it's actually based on the story of Jimmy Governor in Australia. So there's a real person. I also was thinking of the story of Toganini in Chains. I was thinking of the boarding schools that were done in both the U.S. and Canada to try and overwrite Aboriginal culture.
So it's essentially the story of Jimmy living in two worlds. He is taken from his tribe at a very young age and indoctrinated into the Christian Methodist world.
I think it's worth noting part of the reason that happens is Jimmy is mixed race.
Yeah.
They call him half caste, which basically means he's mulatto.
It was interesting that even the people who were sympathetic, his parents, were embarking on this basically low-level eugenics, because they would go to Jimmy and say, okay, well, you get yourself a nice white girl, and you marry her, and you have a child, and all of a sudden, instead of half-caste, he's quarter-caste. And then that child goes and finds a nice white girl, and all of a sudden, it's, you know, 1/16, and so on and so on and so on.
They even say barely black at all. So, yeah, no, that's absolutely in there. And again, that's indicative of the mindset.
So, as the only representative of the closest thing we have to an indigenous demographic on the show,
okay,
I'm going to lean heavily into you.
Okay, that's understandable. I'm a quarter Sioux Indian, is the simple way of putting it. Hunk Papa Sioux, specifically. Standing Rock Indian Reservation, Fort Yates, North Dakota. That's where my family hails from. I also went to alternative high school that was here in the Seattle School District called Indian Heritage High School, where it was some native people as teachers and native leaning curriculum. Learning Thanksgiving from that perspective is really entertaining. Enough of that.
So it was basically your growing up was the reverse of what happened to Jimmy, where he got indoctrinated and tried to be as white as possible, and you got kind of had your culture not imposed on you, but made available to you.
It was introduced to me after it was established that I was white.
So with both feet in both worlds, did you find Jimmy a sympathetic character, or were you coming down more on the white side?
He's a victim. So, and I readily acknowledge, identify him as a victim. And he's not just a victim in the circumstance of he's a half-breed. He's not a victim necessarily in the circumstance of the conclusion of the film. He's a victim because he has two worlds taught to him almost simultaneously, and they conflict with one another, and he tries to live in both worlds, and every so often one dominates. And an example of where one of those worlds dominates is when he effectively becomes a police officer.
So there's the trouble that one of the black camps has, and the police have to go in and find themselves the usual suspects. And so the exceptionally drunk and racist cop hires Jimmy, and they both go to the camp, and the guy just gets out his truncheon and starts wailing on folks. And Jimmy takes up a truncheon and starts wailing on folks, trying to be part of the man. But then, when they get the suspect back to the jail, the cop doesn't take the arrest very well, and the indigenous guy was getting uppity. And so he drinks really heavily and says, hey, Jimmy, why don't you go file some paperwork? I'm going to be in the back with the prisoner. Next thing we know, the prisoner is hung in the cell.
Jimmy's reaction is his indigenous life reasserts itself. He very carefully, you know, shrouds the guy. He's dead, and he goes outside and burns his uniform.
That's all I can stand. I can't stand no more. And he just resigns right there and goes back to doing. He goes through the movie doing all these kind of day labor jobs. He's like building fences for guys, and he's trying to do the best job he can. He even goes and learns and gets information on how to build fences so that he can be, yes, I can rise above my station. And yet the white guys are all like, you know, hey, that fence post was, you know, 2/10 of an inch out of alignment. Fuck you. You don't get no money.
The guy stiffs him on paying him and also won't give him a reference. And Jimmy does something here that really puts out that even within all of what's going on with Jimmy's life, the whites themselves have their own oppression, suppression, and whatnot going on within themselves, the class system. And the guy says, no, I'm not going to give you a reference. And Jimmy's like, oh, you're not going to give me a reference because you don't know how to write.
And then the dude hauls off and decks him.
Yeah.
And he's just like, thanks for proving my point. And he leaves.
Yeah. Going back to the world at war, I'm going to skip a little ahead in the movie for this.
We're bouncing around already.
So at one point when Jimmy's on the run with his brother Mort, and they take a hostage, a school teacher named MacReady.
Interestingly enough, the only sympathetic white guy in the entire movie.
I would say the only fully sympathetic white guy.
Fair enough.
When Jimmy and Mort storm his house, he's largely sympathetic. He kind of understands what's going on, and he's trying to negotiate with them from the point of view of, I get why you're mad, and I am no threat to you. Unfortunately for him, Jimmy decides maybe having a hostage would be useful.
Because at this point in the movie, Jimmy is kind of, he's declared war on the white guy.
What it leads to is a really interesting moment. While they're out there, MacReady suggests going to a sacred space to the Aboriginal, basically because no one would look there.
Yeah.
And they decide that strategically that's a great idea. And they get there and they find that this space has been defaced and desecrated. And there's graffiti everywhere. And MacReady and Mort are both just absolutely devastated at what's happened. And Jimmy is more, whatever, we're just hiding anyway. And Mort starts trying to rebuild, and MacReady starts helping him. And from what I was looking at, symbolically, I felt that Mort represented Jimmy's Aboriginal side. MacReady represented Jimmy's white side, especially the trying to influence him through education. And yet those two symbolic representations were able to work together to try and rebuild the sacred space where Jimmy...
He was very quick to cast off his old ways, like, this site is done, let's just go.
Yeah, and it was a moment of showing that the problem that Jimmy faces internally is he's tried too hard to be both, and he can't reconcile them. But showing that reconciliation on some level is possible because those two halves could work together if there was a chance for understanding. It was, to me, one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah. And that was the point where Jimmy goes off on his own. He leaves Mort and Mr. MacReady, and Mort says, hey, you're really sick. Let's just take you back to civilization. And that's where he drags him back to the nearest house. The guy on there freaks out and pretty much drives him off at gunpoint. And then the hunting party comes and kills Mort.
After Mort's been killed and he's laid out on the table and the whole photo thing going, that is something that's gone on through history. You can find historical photos, and it's not just in the instance of indigenous peoples dead with a bunch of whites around them. They did that with criminals general.
I mean, the Old West, you get all kinds of photography of bodies.
Well, that one famous picture of, it was Jesse James
Billy in the
coffin. Billy the Kid in the coffin.
Billy the Kid in the coffin. That in and of itself isn't that bizarre. Although I think from a filmmaking standpoint, it was...
it was a message.
It was conveying something.
Well, it was definitely reinforcing the, hey, you know, they see the blacks as nothing more than animals and savages.
I think it's also worth noting how Mort dies. Because Mort wasn't running. He wasn't attacking. Mort was sitting. He had painted his face white and was basically praying. He knew what was coming, and he was preparing himself for that transition. And so the party that captured him could have easily just approached him and apprehended him.
But they decided to gun him down.
They decided, no, we're going to kill him. And I think it's just, you know, the only reason I think that didn't happen with Jimmy is when they found Jimmy, because Jimmy gets wounded in the movie. And not only just wounded, a horrible wound. It's in his face.
Yeah, basically they get his cheek blown off, which from a purely technical standpoint was a great looking prosthetic.
At the end, these were not, they were victims and their deaths kind of exemplified that victimhood, but in different ways. In Mort's death was very much, you know, being in his roots, dying as a proud Aboriginal man. Jimmy's, on the other hand, in a combat, Jimmy's demise was still his conflicted worlds.
One of the issues that I had with the movie on a technical level is that you have Jimmy and we follow his life from when he was a little boy all the way up to, well, pretty much the end of his life, because how is a movie like this going to end? But it's a whole bunch of vignettes. It's like, you know, he's on a job, he's on another job, he's on another job, and there's not a lot of connective tissue between them, so it feels a little disjointed.
I now actually want to get the novel. I've only looked into a little bit about what the differences were between the novel and the movie, and I don't know if this difference is there or not. But one of the things I think that probably would have helped dramatically with the editing of the film, which would have just made it a more solid film and more captivating, is as if the movie had started with him on the run.
Oh, there you go.
He's on the run with Mort and MacReady. It starts out that way. And MacReady's like, how did you get here?
Yeah, and in media res.
And then...
Yeah.
My solution would have been, I would have liked to have seen this as a miniseries where you have 8 or 10 hours to tell the story. Because there's an awful lot of story here and it's a little choppy and disjointed.
One of the issues with this movie is at times I'm like... Okay, in the first hour, because let's be honest, it's nearly an hour in before Jimmy breaks. But the first hour, we are clearly sympathetic to Jimmy. We're seeing his life. We're seeing the gross level of mistreatment he's had at several people's hands.
He's kind of sunshiny and bubbly, even though he's being, have all this shit dumped on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when the first time he gets hit by, because after he tells the guy that he can't write, he laughs. He's like, yeah. Yeah, you hit me.
I'm right.
But you hit me because I'm right. No, but once we get to that breaking point, and the breaking point comes down to, I mean, in some way, very understandable. You know, Jimmy has a wife and child. His uncle and his brother have come to visit them because, hey, baby. And the owner of the ranch he's working on is like, I'm not happy that you have other blacks on my property now, so I'm not going to pay you. And which at that point he's building up his overall pay, but part of his pay is just groceries. We're not going to allow you to have groceries as long as your family's here. And Jimmy's like, I'm still working. So there's a confrontation between the rancher and Jimmy that gets a little heated, but Jimmy wanders off, and then he and the family go back to the ranch house to get the groceries. And there's nothing but the women folk there. And their intention was just to threaten them. And so they have hatchets. Unfortunately, things get a little out of hand and it goes from a demand to a massacre.
Jimmy's face heel turn is a little abrupt for my liking. It doesn't, you don't see any buildup. It's just like he's happy and bubbly and then all of a sudden, X.
Yeah, I was expecting somebody was going to attack Jimmy. And one of the men, because I knew there was going to be a break. I assumed it was going to be the confrontation with the rancher earlier. And my assumption was he was going to kill the rancher and that was going to set it off. So
he does eventually down the road, but it's kind of once violence is taken off, he kind of weaves his way back through all the people who have wronged him.
Well, and then even his second set of victims is women, which interestingly becomes a sticking point between him and Mort. Mort clearly would have no problem attacking men, but Jimmy's attacking women, and that doesn't set well with him.
Yeah, he's actually the most moral of the two. He's all like, you know, I, when he shoots that lady, it was all by accident. He goes over and apologizes to her. Mm-hmm. When Jimmy admits that, hey, I kind of like this, and you know, let's go put down the man. Mort's all like, no, you're devil man. You're devil man.
At this point, Jimmy has broken. And you know, while through the rest of the movie, you still see his point, you kind of know at that point, Jimmy's a lost cause. Yeah. He's there's nothing, you know, his best case would be to abandon everything and disappear into the bush.
Yeah.
It just, his anger won't let him do it.
And for me, at least, when you get to the very end of the movie where Jimmy is caught and he's in the jail cell and they're about to hang him, mm-hmm. and they bring in the hangman and he's looking through the peephole and assessing the case. That point, I wasn't necessarily sympathetic to him, but I have empathy for him, yeah. his plight. He, at that point, is as much a victim of the system as everybody else.
Well, and I also, in that scene, the minister who helped raise him comes back and basically apologizes.
Yeah.
Basically says, it takes blame that my attempts to make you white are probably at least partially to blame for your situation. Oh, yeah. I feel responsibility. So at least there was the one person owning, maybe I didn't do right by you.
Yeah. And there was the bit where MacReady, as they're going up to the sacred place, he's going down all the achievements that the whites have imposed upon the natives. You know, blankets with cholera, booze, syphilis, and so on and so on and so on. And he's saying it with this very much disdain in his voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, yeah, this was a great movie to watch. Not one I would have sought out if it had not existed on the list. I wouldn't have looked it up. In fact, I remember when you're saying, hey, we're doing this one. I was trying to remember. I was like, did I even agree to this one? Or did you just go, oh, I need Jeff?
It was probably I need Jeff. So, yes, there is a great deal to unpack in this movie.
Yeah.
So we've unpacked everything we possibly can. I want to get into the technical aspects because
sure.
above and beyond a lot of message in here, it's a really well done movie.
My only complaints were the lackluster mob and some of the editing choices. But the cinematography.
Yeah.
Well, there's like the one scene where Jimmy is with his parents and they're having dinner. And this is very early on in the movie. Mm. And Jimmy is laying out, here's what I'm going to do. And they start pulling back from the dinner table and they go through this door. So you see Jimmy's world framed in this door.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
I remember that thinking about that yeah. shot and going, that was a very telling shot because it showed a lot of things. One, there's a disassociation. We're very distant. Also, I think it shows how boxed in Jimmy is.
So at the end of the day, white people, please stop putting down the indigenous population for fuck's sake. So, The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith. Would you guys, if you were the police, seize the movie or would you let the shopkeeper keep it?
I know that when we did Alice, Sweet Alice, we talked about it was probably child murder. And there is a child murder in this movie, but it's racism. It's racism with a capital R that's got attention at all. Jimmy, the one prominent sex scene in the movie is Jimmy with his white woman. I think for the moral guardians, it's, a black man had sex with a white woman. Bad. And then the rest of it is, you know, just the basic racism of, we don't want to talk about this story.
Exactly. I would go far above and beyond the just that they're using, you know, black and nigger and lot. It makes the white people uncomfortable. And that's what gets the movie on the ban list.
They don't want newer generations hearing about it. However, it's considered one of the top films covering Indigenous peoples in Australia now. So,
and the fact of it is, and as Ian has said, this is a story that repeats itself in any place where you have one people trying to oppress an Indigenous people constantly. So,
and it's going on right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure in the 80s when, you know, people weren't talking as openly about these problems, something like this that is facing it head on was terrifying because, no, let's not open up those conversations. So, yes, let's make this movie obscene. Why? Because it makes me feel bad in my tummy.
The only reason that I wound up watching this movie, and I know the only reason you wound up watching this movie, was it was because it was on the list. And I knew nothing about that period of time. I mean, beyond the high level, white people fuck Aborigines.
Mm-hmm.
So it did its job. It illuminated me on the, hey, this shit was actually pretty prevalent and deep.
I mean, it was hard for me to watch it on that level. Sure. I had to a couple starts and stops because I was getting uncomfortable. On the flip side, one of my best friends since I'm a teenager is a native. So, you know, that's, you know, I've been exposed to this. Yeah, I've been exposed to this literally since I was a teenager, at varying levels as Ian got more comfortable presenting these things to me, which was frankly pretty early.
So, appropriate to seize?
No.
No. Not appropriate to seize by any means. It was pure gut reaction.
All right, so not seized. We'll leave it off the list. The shopkeeper can keep it. I think using the word like is probably not appropriate for the movie, but it's the only term I have. Did we like the Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith?
I admired this movie. When you say like, it's a slow pace, which is rough for some people. It's, as we have talked about, it is an uncomfortable subject. But based from just the appreciation of what the filmmaker was attempting to do, the subject matter they were tackling and the skill it was tackled with, I admired the hell out of this movie. So on that level, for something like this, that's basically a like.
Yeah, I liked it. It's very compelling. It's very illuminating on a subject matter that, frankly, as a white dude, I don't really have a lot of insight on. So yes, I liked it. I admired it. I'll use that term.
It's not a film that I like. No, I respect it. It's a movie I will rewatch, but I have to be in a mindset. It would be a movie that I would go to if I've got somebody who really doesn't understand what's going on in the world even today. And it's like, well, here's a movie that lays it out pretty well.
It's the cinematic equivalent of eating your vegetables. It's good for you.
All right. I'm going to close on that. Thank you. We're going to eat our vegetables. Go eat your fucking vegetables.
Fresh popcorn, delicious and crisp, with or without butter.
Why, thank you for joining us on our vision quest to discover if Jimmy Blacksmith's any good or not. Next week, we're going to be watching a movie you've probably never heard of. I've never heard of it. It's a small film, lost it would have been if not for this list. We're going to be watching The Child. So drop us an email. TheVideoNastyProject@gmail.com. Tell us what you think of Jimmy Blacksmith or The Child, and we'll catch you next week. Until that time, stay evil.
You see, boss, I got a contract, and I want to do a fucking good job.
No language in here, huh?
Beg pardon, boss.
Me? That's a word the glorious English created to describe what they mainly do to fireboys.
Right, out. That's it, Carmichael.